What's up, everyone? This episode of Power Spike is brought to you by the tears of sad fanboys that can't handle the truth. Without you, there would be no Last Free Nation or Power Spike. Thank you very much. It's your boy Deegon along with Monty and Dom. And y'all, not a lot of matches in terms of quantity, questionable in terms of the quality, but lots of drama that happened this week. Like, a lot of shit happened this week. Post-LCS, in the middle of LEC playoffs, and with a couple of matches of the LPL and LCK. How was your week, Dom?
Oh, it was eventful, man. I went to war with T1 once again. We're pretty mild comments. Like, I think that we're just at the point where it is just me versus them no matter what.
Yeah. I like how we all got involved in our own individual dramas this week. Deegon started the witch hunt against Inspired. I suspect that BDS had some level of scrim leaks because of their level one in the first game versus G2, and you just went in on the T1 DDoS.
Yep. Absolutely went in.
We'll get to all of those big topics in just a little bit. We just watched, as of 7:30 Pacific Coast time, the knockout of the fourth to third place match for NIP and JDG. Finally, this was the time, Monty. This was the time, Dom. Rookie going to make it to the international stage. Monty and I have been deprived of seeing Rookie like play in an in-person international tournament.
It was classic Rookie heartbreak, which is kind of a waffle around in the regular season with his team, then catch on fire for the playoffs, but then fall, you know, make it to double a limb, but then lose twice and just get eliminated immediately.
The classic dumb.
Yep, that's how it always is, man. Going into game five, I already knew it was guaranteed loss. Like, there's no way the Rookie will end up winning that game five versus JDG. It just couldn't happen. That's just not how LPL works, bro. Rookie is destined to always lose in these big moments for the rest of time, I guess.
I mean,
it's actually outrageous how few international tournaments he's competed in. It's such a crime, considering that he's, I mean, I think you could make an argument that he is the best mid laner of all time in terms of consistency over the years and maintaining a high level. And we just haven't seen very much of him when it comes to MSIs or Worlds, despite the fact that he is also a world champion.
Yeah. What is the word would you describe him? Like, I was trying to think, is he a relic? Is he the LPL relic? Is he an LPL talisman? Is the LPL, you know, I guess he's kind of a journeyman because there's been multiple teams that have built around him. What is the term that you would put on to Rookie right now, Adam?
I don't know, man. He's just like the least lucky. He is the most unlucky player of all time, man. That's it. It's always something that's like he didn't play well in this best of five. And I think we're past the Rookie peak. I mean, he's still really insane. He's still like one of the best players, like one of the best mid laners in LPL, like top four for sure. But we're past his Omega peak where he was hard carry. I think the saddest part was when he was like the best player in LPL. He just wouldn't make it to even like top four. Like, how are you not making top four? How are you not making top three and going to Worlds when you're the best player in the league? Like, he was getting into it so hard before.
Yeah. So NIP, that mixture of the OMG boys with Rookie joining on in, fall a little bit short here against JDG. JDG up 2-0 in that series. Had a little bit of a scare there, but Ruler put on his carry pants on the final game with Zaya. Took it a little personal. He took it personal, took a massive gold lead in the laning phase. And then in a lot of these team fights, just knew who to isolate out. In this case, it was Fojic, did his job great. And JDG, how do you feel about their chances moving forward? Just a quick thought there, Dom.
I think they have more of a chance than people are going to give them credit for. I mean, they got 3-0'd by Top Esports the first time that they played, but that was a series where it felt like JDG was really off their game. Kanavi specifically was just playing pretty poorly individually. So I think they're going to be able to come into the Top Esports series and or BLG, whoever they end up playing. I assume it's going to be Top Esports, though, because BLG is like pretty big favorites, I would say, over Top. But if they play Top again, I think it's Top Esports favored, but not by like a huge margin. I think it could go either way.
We'll dive into that series and the LCK playoff predictions with a finer comb in a little bit. You know, every episode I always say, hey, this is the part where you write in the comments and let us know in the comments what you think. And then I always forget to read it. So right now I got a dedicated spot to read some of our comments from last episode. If you forgot, we were finishing up on Cloud 9 and the LCS as a whole. So those are some of the comments that we had. One of the comments that we threw out there by our good friends over at G2 said, hey, Dom, you said we should decrease the amount of teams in the LCS, just keep the top teams. G2 hopped into our chat and said, or in the LEC, and he said, why stop at four teams, Dom? Just make it a one team league. G2 lol, thanks.
I mean, it already is pretty much. Like, I think that's one thing that we saw from the series versus BDS. It really just feels like no matter what G2 does, they'll just always win. Like, I don't know what other teams could do to challenge them. It just feels like they're like, even when BDS countered the G2 lane swap level one, you go like 5 minutes into the game, and G2 is actually, even though they're down in gold, they're actually ahead on tempo. Like, they're ahead on the map. They're the ones controlling the game when they got, like, aced at level one almost. So I don't even know, man. I just feel like no one's even close to G2 when it comes to just, like, when it comes to overall team play and just, like, team IQ, G2 is by far the smartest team. And then when it comes to, like, individual skill, teams are also behind there. They're not as behind there as, I guess, the like, game, the, like, you know, team IQ, whatever. I think the biggest issue is that then when you look at these, like, you look at these games, G2 just will outplay in just a couple situations and they'll win the whole game. Like, they'll get like 10 chances to outplay. If they outplay in like one or two, the whole game's over.
Monty, any thoughts on decreasing the teams and the catalyst that makes G2 so damn unbeatable?
Oh no, we're not gonna decrease the number of teams in the league, Deegan. That's not what's gonna happen at all. We're gonna have Saudi Arabian teams. Team Falcon is going to join the league. That's what's actually going to happen. Is that because, of course, they you know, kind of undercover changed the name from the League of Legends European Championship to the League of Legends EMEA Championship, which is Europe, Middle East, and Africa. What we're going to actually see is Middle Eastern investment now. They're going to pick up some of the teams, outrageously overpay players, and the quality will remain exactly the same as it is right now.
All right. Well, look forward to that. Thank you, G2 Law, for spurring us into some conversation here. Here's another one. This is from Mental Cow. I know I should, probably should, but I don't really care about LCS viewership because the product is much more enjoyable, and it really was. Less teams made it. Sure. So there was more close competition and less undeserving players having spots just to fill rosters, less expectations. Internationally made it more fun to care about the league itself. So this comment basically saying, hey, look, product was better, viewership was down. That's something that we agree with, Monty. And, yep. You know, it's good to see, just kind of sad to see it so late, right?
Yeah. I mean, I released a video on my YouTube channel about comparisons of LCS viewership to previous splits, as well as to things like, I don't know, CB LOL this year, which it's lower than, and talked about, you know, the ways in which Riot is kind of gaming the numbers when it comes to the announcement they've already made. And I think the announcements they are likely to make around the numbers of the league, especially because I think there's going to be some sort of PR party about average viewership increases when those average viewers are just not North American viewers, almost certainly, because they're on Kdrill and Bionos streams. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a better product, but is this a good thing, or is it still, it's still in the death spiral it was in? So enjoy it while it's here would be my advice.
Yeah, that's the hope there. And then, finally, just some love for Dom. There were like three or four comments just repeating, let Dom know I appreciate his coverage of the LPL. His insight on the games is top tier, and his commentary is even better. There's a follow-up comment that said, I love how Dom can really give good commentary on the game state and also be like, wow, X player just turbo ran it. Dry.
Dry.
So there you have it. Just some fan love here, which
nice.
Is something I wanted to share because it feels like this week we got a lot of hate. A lot of hate from a lot of different places, whether it was Twitter, whether it is the hive mind of Reddit, some on the comments, wherever. It was kind of crazy.
Dude, I love this hate as if it's going to affect me in any way, shape, or form. Because the thing about Reddit is that back in the day, the league back subreddit, if you used to get to like top three on the league subreddit with like a video, it would literally mean like 50,000 additional views for your videos. When you get videos up that high on the league subreddit these days, it's like, you know, on our channels for Last Free Nation, it's like maybe a 5% difference in viewership. So it's really rather negligible. Because now Reddit is just, the league Reddit is now just entirely populated by some very, I would say, deranged people who need to type horrible things and just lie constantly and make falsehoods.
How did you say something yeah. that people didn't agree with? How did I get flamed out of that?
To be fair, I also catch strays a lot of the time when you do things.
That is true.
Really?
But it's fine. Yes.
I haven't yeah, bro. See any in the
I like it. You know, we do one show together, but somehow you're catching strays from my Twitter. It's very weird, you know, the association in these people's minds.
Yeah, I didn't even agree with you either. I literally like disagreed exactly. with you publicly. Like I was like, yeah, I don't think that. Yeah. But I mean, I guess it is what it is. What I've realized is it doesn't matter who agrees with what anymore. Like literally the way that the DDoS situation ended up happening was I was like, I think Faker was wrong for talking about it here. And then Faker was like, I also think I was wrong for talking about it here. And then somehow the fans were like, fuck you, Dom. Like, you piece of shit. Look at what you did. You made Faker apologize. Like,
it's the same thing. Like, they just see you talking negatively about T1 in some way. And so they just attack you. I mean, you will notice that nobody actually talked about the point that I made about the suspiciousness of the lane swap scenario. The only thing anybody said was this has been BDS did this last year. They didn't. And that it, you know, this was common. It was common knowledge that lane swaps were working. It was one game. And like, you know, a lot of this was just kind of messed up from the start, even on G2's side. Like, even G2 has had players that used to compete in the lane swap meta, like, they didn't play this perfectly. And by the way, NIP didn't play it perfectly either when they ran it compared to how lane swaps used to be. And we'll get into that later on the show. But a lot of the evidence that was used was not actually addressing the point that the weirdest part of this was that they 5-stacked their own red buff with no information at level 1. That was the weirdest part, and that's what I find suspicious. Not that, you know, they didn't anticipate a lane swap, and I, you know, people are like, oh, of course, when you they have double Halo Blades in the bot lane, and like you see the Lulu Jinx, and there's the blind pig sign. Yeah, of course, I agree with all of this. That's a big tell that something weird is, you know, some shenanigans are afoot. But that doesn't mean that you react the way they did, and that to me is the strangest part of all of this. But nobody ever talks about that point because apparently even Doublelift, who lived through the lane swap meta, completely has forgotten how it works. So what do you know?
Yeah,
we will get into all what a lane swap is. Like, I mean, look, this is the two options, right? Either we have to like say that Doublelift has malicious intent and he is literally lying, which I actually put out a video. I proved that he was just completely wrong about stuff that he displays as facts. Like, he said T1 ran this a lot at Worlds. I went through every single game of Worlds. That's what I did this morning. I went through every single game of Worlds because I'm like, I don't remember that happening, but like, let me at least double check before I just go out there and start like saying bullshit. So I went through every single game. They didn't do it one time. Like, Zeus just lane top every single game, and they didn't do any like level 1 like bot lane bullshit. Like, I don't even know what he could be referring to when he said that this happened at Worlds. Like, I went through literally every single game. I have no clue, like, even in the most charitable way, what he could have been referring to at Worlds. I watched every single game. That was number 1.
Let me say this as somebody who knows Doublelift personally, has worked with him. I don't think that he is lying. I don't think he's lying. I think he's just an idiot. I think he's actually just so dumb that he has the memory of a goldfish and he invents things in his mind and they become truth. I actually think he is one of the most honest people I know. There's actually no deception. This is why he leaked everything, guys. You remember when he would just leak anything that came into his brain? Yeah, that there is no deception here besides his own mind playing tricks on himself.
I mean, okay, so if that's the case, then he just simply, like, then he just should not be talking about, like, what a lane swap is. Then he thinks that Sion, like, diving bot lane. Like, so then he has Tenacity dive his lane at level two. They're like, Tenacity, what you're going to do is you're going to force a map split. You're going to invade. You're going to do three camps with closer. Then you're going to come dive my lane. And then, like, Tenacity does it. He's like, great lane swap. Go back top, Tenacity. And then Tenacity goes back top. Like, maybe that's, like, the only other option, right? Like,
that's what,
like,
BDS did last year. That's what BDS did.
My interactions with Doublelift, I think he is malicious. I think that he is literally just lying on purpose. I don't think that he is so incredibly stupid that he played those. He played all the scrims. He did. He played all those matches on stage. You got to remember, 100 Thieves was the team that started this in the LCS, and they did this more than anyone else. I just don't believe that he's so stupid that he played all of that. And then he just thinks that that is a lane swap when he also played lane swaps. It's not like he's a new player that only played in this. Like, I think that he would know the difference between, like, sacking the Sion to get himself ahead and a true lane swap. Because I played scrims. Like, the other thing is I played against Doublelift during the whole lane swap meta. Since season two, like, you got to remember, I was a pro for the whole lane swap. Like, season six, it ended. Season six, I retired.
Yeah.
So I played hundreds of scrims.
Season five Worlds was the last time this was really, like, a big thing.
Yes, and season six, it was in between spring and summer that they deleted lane swaps. They pretty much just removed it from the game. They added the turret armor, whatever, right? So I played hundreds of scrims, and I remember him actually being pretty good at lane swaps. Like, I remember there was times where we had to learn from CLG. They were always, like, pretty good at learning. So I can't imagine that he played hundreds of games of lane swaps, and then he did that strategy, and he thinks that a lane swap is the same thing. Like, it's a lane swap. He was in the bot lane. The enemy team was in the bot lane. His like is he really that stupid that he thinks lane, like, I don't know, man. That's like if you try to tell me that it's like, oh, like he thinks that bot lane is top lane. It's like when you say top, he thinks that what that means is bot. Like, he doesn't know where the lanes are. Like, I can't imagine actually being him being that stupid. But maybe everyone else is right and I'm just, like, delusional with it. Like, maybe he's just more stupid than I give him credit for.
I don't think he forgot, but I kind of agree more with Monty. I don't think Peter didn't ever seem malicious to me. He did just seem like thinking so much that, like, it's not all processing at the right time. So
he thinks that. So you think that he literally thinks that's a lane swap? That he thinks that when the Sion goes bot lane and then TP's back top and he's laning against the bot lane the entire game, he thinks that that is a 2v1 lane swap.
I think he's misnamed it.
I think he has fooled himself in his own mind, Dom. That's what I think. I think he has conflated lane swaps with that, and now they are the same thing in his brain.
Okay. Chat, y'all are crazy, man. But yes, what Monty said is what I agree.
I mean,
with.
Maybe, like, I can't know. I can't know what's going on in his mind. It just seems so incredible that could be a thing. But maybe.
Yes. Well, you know, many things about my interactions with him have been what I would call incredible.
Yeah. I mean, some of my best interviews were with Doublelift. I will agree. But I think it's because he's stream of consciousness and I force him, like, you know, an interview forces him to sit down and talk it out. And then he just, like, debates himself and I get to interject every now and then to help steer him in the right direction. So I think without someone there to help interject, you know, you get the output that he just had. I will say
I don't think this is malicious from Doublelift towards me, because he should know that if he wants to start playing very dangerous games with me, I know many things that he does not want public. He knows nothing about me. So that's a very, very dangerous game for him to be playing.
Yeah, I don't think he's playing that game. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. We'll get into the lane swap meta so that you can become a little more educated, young nephews. But first up, I need you guys to listen up, because y'all, we've gotten soft. And so that is the topic of this week's Listen Up, Nephews. It's my inspired interview and what has happened to our league community. So, very last episode, I said, hey, I'm uploading the Inspired interview and the APA interview. It was a decent APA interview if you would take the time to watch it. But instead, everyone took the time to watch the Inspired interview where he took personal offense, not against Jensen, but against vegans everywhere. Sorry, vegans. Inspired does not like you. He used the word, perma-spammed it, like 10, maybe 12 times. I think everyone was playing a fun drinking game. If you drink every time that he said vegan, you would die before the end of the interview. I agree. I was front row seat there watching it happen. And so I got to talk with a couple people, general managers, coaches, to weigh in on this, because obviously a lot of the audience and some other content creators said, wow, he really threw him under the bed, he flamed his own teammate, blah blah blah, which I agree, he went in, but knowing Casper, knowing Inspired, this is how he talks. He is so straightforward with this feedback and is critical of himself. I think what everyone dismissed is the fact that he called himself vegan, that he said, I could have played better here in these spots. He was very critical of himself here. So where I get frustrated, because no one said it was my fault. I don't, you know, I'm not like, man, I wouldn't have ran that. I get upset that I use my own judgment to not protect players from themselves, but to just be like, hey, is this cancelable? Did they say something that was way out of line? I was like, no, this player was the best player in the league, got MVP taken from him, you know, and I feel the same way. Then has a dominant run all the way to the finals, and all of a sudden his team doesn't show up there. He's frustrated. He's upset. Yes, he's going to MSI, but that doesn't take away the fact that this is a title game with one of your most dominant players in the league frustrated. And where I get upset is that it feels like everyone in the league community wants your best players to be the anime protagonist that is going to be humble when they lose and humble when they win. And that's not how everyone is made. My man Inspired is a fucking championship player who has championship winning acumen, who wants to win above everything else. And that's okay if that fire spills over every now and then, because he can bring a team to the top. And that is fine. The way that he spoke to Jensen is the way that he would speak to him in person. We just got to see it. That's what I asked. People were like, you goaded him on by asking him, wow, would you really say this, Jensen? That was me making sure that he wasn't talking shit behind his back, because he would say the same exact thing, which is what I was thinking when I uploaded this video. He would say the same exact thing the same way. And this is the lens that we get to have as great interviewers, where it's not just, hey, do you like money? Do you want more money? Hey, what is this champion? That's fine. But now when you guys get a view behind the scenes, what it's like in the league space, everyone bitches and complains about how it was given. And that's why we get more manicured pieces of content. That is why you get whatever the fuck they're going to serve you up, and everyone is nice and playful with everything. It's because you can't handle the truth. It's because you can't handle that people come from many different walks of life, and you can't handle that there are many shades of gray. And it pisses me off to no end, because we have, all of us here in LFN and our content that we give to you is catered so that you can think outside the box. It's so that you can see beyond what is just given to you from other content creators. And you know what? You're just like, I don't know if I like that. This person was mean to the other person. That shit happens. What the fuck? It's competitive sports.
And also, like, I think you have to remember what, you know, basically there was kind of underperformance across the board for FlyQuest. And obviously that's very, you know, that's very annoying if you're a highly competitive player. It's very frustrating if you just came off that final. And I'm going to mention something here that you guys probably have seen, which I don't know if you guys remember, but in the NFC Championship game in 2013, the Seahawks beat the Niners. And there's a very famous interview from like 10 years ago now with Richard Sherman, who is a very skilled corner, who is like talking shit about Michael Crabtree, who is the Niners receiver that he was covering. And people jumped all over Richard Sherman. And remember, he was like on the field right after the game and like talking mad shit. It actually wasn't that bad shit. It was pretty mild. I think he said something like, I'm trying to remember off the top of my head, but it's like, you can't have me covering a sorry receiver like Crabtree. So it wasn't like he was cursing or anything like that. It was relatively mild. And people just like lost their minds in America that this guy would be like rude to the person he beat. And this was obviously in victory, so it's not in defeat, like we're talking about with Jensen. But my point is that if you talk to people right after that experience who are competitors, they're all fucking amped up and full of emotion. And like, they're just going to say shit sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes they say the wrong thing and they need to apologize. It should be okay, right? I don't see anything wrong with that. I'm getting an IRL look. Like, can you stop pissing off everyone and endangering our lives?
Too funny. But it's like, you know, when you're in these scenarios, you actually want those reactions because they're genuine and interesting and they create good storylines. And also, Michael Crabtree was a shitty receiver. So, you know, history proved that one correct. Yeah. As it turns out.
I mean, I think the most important thing that I saw, and I think the thing that people aren't talking about, is how Jensen would respond to it. Like, Jensen is not some like pussy ass 18-year-old that just got into the league and he's shitting his pants every time he goes onto the stage. Like, Jensen is he is somebody who has like that asshole humor, and he's like a pretty
hardened
individual
sure.
to flame. Like, this guy is, I mean, that's incarnation, bro. That's Vagod X. Like, this is who we're fucking talking about here. And I've known Jensen for years. He was actually like somebody, he lived with Mo, who was one of my good friends, and I've hung out with him a bunch of times in person. I did an episode of The Crackdown with him, and the way that like that he would communicate, and like just even the way I interviewed him, is I was just like talking about, oh, what happened with that, like, I started the interview, I'm like, all right, so tell us, like, what happened with that Echo R? Like, do you feel like you choking your Echo R in like season in game five and season seven
the versus famous Bjergsen,
was a big mistake or not? And then his response to that, to me flaming him for like not Echo R-ing, was, I did feel bad about that, but then I thought about when I beat you and went worlds over you in regional gauntlet season five, and then I felt a lot better about everything. Like, that's who Jensen is. Like, he's somebody who can take flame, he can dish it out. Like, he's not somebody who's gonna be super upset by what Inspired said. Like, he'll probably take it at face value and be like, okay, like, this is what you think, and he'll go over the games and he'll either agree with it or disagree with it. He's not somebody who's gonna be like, oh my god, my teammate threw me under the bus. And I think Inspired knows who he's dealing with on his team. Like, yeah. He didn't go and say like, oh, Masu and Busio fucked up really bad. Like, he didn't throw the young players like under the bus. He talked honestly about his play, Whippo's play, and Jensen's play. Those are the people that he focused on pretty much the entire interview. And I think that's because he knows who's on his team and who can like take the criticism and who can't.
Exactly. And I think that thought gets lost on everyone. Like, this team was probably the closest knit team in the league. After scrims, they would stay after in the office, and, you know, FlyQuest is now starting to build out their multiple teams. They would hang out and play games with the other staff members, a couple of the other teams. It was surprising to see how close they were. And then it's just so surprising to see how much people discredit Inspired knowing that. And the fact that they're going to MSI means that they're like, yes, the split is over, but unlike a lot of the other teams, they show up for work the next day to keep going and keep grinding. This is exactly the conversation he's going to have with Jensen. And like, as you said, Jensen can take this thing. I'm just so bummed.
Yeah, I mean, was that the time for it? Like, obviously not is the answer. But it really wasn't a big, like,
yeah, what he did was not good.
It was like, It wasn't good, but it also wasn't fucking terrible or like worthy of a witch hunt against Jensen, right? Or Inspired, rather. I think the whole thing is so overblown, in my opinion.
It's really overblown. And I think the thing that I saw was people were like, oh man, if I was the GM and I heard one of my players talking about this or saying things like this against one of my teammates, I would just fucking want him off the team. Like, if I was on the team and I heard one of my teammates talking like this about me, I would want him off the team. Jensen absolutely does not want Inspired off the team. Jensen wants to fucking win more than anything. So
exactly.
Like, if anything, it would be this, like, hey, I don't like what you said in an interview. And then Inspired was like, oh, okay, why did you not like what I said? And then Jensen would be like, oh, like, because of this, this, and this. And then Inspired would be like, all right, my bad. And then they would just move on and just like scrim the next day. It would not be a big deal with these two players. Like, these are not American players. These are European players. Like, we have to understand there's a difference.
I also think that in general, most pro players are capable of taking tough criticism because that's the way that they've actually improved enough to be pro players in the first place. And they have a competitive mentality where I made this point on Summoning Insight, but most true competitors in sports and esports would rather they hate losing more than they hate being flamed by their teammates. And so they would rather get flamed by their teammates, get better, or main, you know, be a vent for their teammates to get angry temporarily than lose.
So. I don't know. It's like in EU, I doubt we would have the same conversation. I mean, I got to you got to remember North America. We had a legitimate discussion on Twitter about if Santorin was anti BLM because he used a police Volibear skin. Like that is the region we're talking about.
Like, hey, well,
Santorin, one of the nicest guys in the league.
Like this is actually a conversation we had. It is so like how sensitive we're getting.
In Overwatch, we had a conversation on social media about whether crouch spamming on people, teabagging people, was sexual assault. So consider that.
Nice. Nice. Worthwhile conversations for sure.
So, I've been thinking about this all week. Friends that are here watching, if you're here, raise up, because I know I don't really have to share this with you. Everyone here on Last Free Nation generally understands that, and you guys get that. But it was so upsetting and frustrating that, you know, I felt bad. I felt bad for Inspired. I felt bad for FlyQuest. I felt bad. And it makes me not want to do interviews anymore to get the insight. And that's what makes me frustrated, that players now will either be more timid to talk about things and share their emotion and share what they're like, or I just won't do this shit anymore. And then you just don't have those types of interviews, and then you can just...
Nah, you can't let the idiots win.
Idiots
aren't good. Well, me personally, I've been emotionally affected by all the flame, and I've decided I'm going to retire giving my real opinions. I'm just going to be PC from now on. Is what I came on the show to say today.
What's so funny about this is like the last week is just like Reddit, so people who don't watch my content, and then a bunch of French people who don't speak English and don't watch my content telling me that I suck. And I'm like, your opinions are literally irrelevant to what I am doing because you both don't and never would have watched my content in the first place. So why do I care what you say?
Yeah, we had a lot of that this week. Pretty dumb. Educate yourselves. All right, so that was Listen Up Nephews. Thank you to all the nephews that have been here throughout, but we gotta let them know. We gotta let them know, these youngins. Speaking of youngins that don't know, let's go ahead and dive into it, Monty. It's time to talk about these youngins playing in the LEC that have no idea how the lane swap meta used to be so that they could protect themselves across all permeations of it. Permeations, I think that's the right word.
Yes, that's right.
This week's Everything is on Fire. Lane swaps are back, baby. But all the teams are maybe not so ready for it.
All right. I love lane swaps. I always loved lane swaps. I hated the fact that Riot put the turret fortification on mid and top lane turrets up until 5 minutes, which reduces turret damage by 50%. It's actually just a straight up bullshit invisible mechanic in the game that was designed to hurt lane swapping in pro play, because kind of by the end of 2015 and into 2016, Riot was, you know, their main goal is making the professional scene look as much like solo queue as, I mean, it doesn't really, but as much as they possibly can. And so this was something they wanted to destroy it. And so a lot of the players, and I think, you know, legitimately, when we saw it in the NIP versus FPX series, game four was kind of the inspiration. And we heard G2, you know, talk about that. And Adam very respectfully said to me on Twitter that they had also watched that. And so, players are,
nice.
the pro players are very respectfully, the only way that Adam communicates, and then people get surprised when I'm not respectful back to him. I know it's weird, you know, it's almost like, I will just return what you give to me. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I think the thing about that was that Monty, I mean, somehow when this started, Adam has had me blocked for like 3 years, then he unblocked me. Then when this started again, he reblocked me without me even commenting on it. He just knew some shit was about to go down. He preemptively blocked me because of this, Monty. So
that's so funny.
Throw that out there. But yeah, continue.
That's too funny. Anyway, you know, I don't really care. Like, I'll go ahead and tell Adam he was shit, you know, played like shit, because he did. And also, I mean, he is actually just frankly straight up the best person to lane swap against, because he's dumb. So he's never going to figure it out in game. He needs some serious training wheels to get through these lane swaps. And he played hilariously badly in these lane swaps. And not only that, but he fucking gave up in game number 3, which was even more embarrassing. Like actually asking to FF in all chat and then just standing next to the turret waiting for G2 to kill him, which, like, in a playoff game is just fucking inexcusable, not only for yourself, but just because it demoralizes your entire team. So anyway, big idiot, big loser. Don't give a fuck what he says. I mean, or his moronic fans.
Yeah, I think the way that we should start this conversation is just telling people what, like, a lane swap is, because I feel like so many people are not educated.
Yes.
So, let me start with my interpretation, and then you can go.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
What I think a lane swap is when the duo lane goes bot, and then the enemy duo lane goes bot, and then your team invades with a Sion and then dives one of the bot laners. Like, I think that is actually a lane swap. What do you think a lane swap is, Monty?
Oh, yeah. I heard that from Doublelift. I've actually changed, you know, my reference. I also heard that a lot on Twitter was because, you know, BDS was doing that last year, particularly in a game that they played versus Team Heretics, that BDS would then know how to lane swap because they did a Sion cheese. Now, I was under the mistaken impression that Sion cheeses, of which there are many, guys, because of Sion passive and the way that the champion works, has been used in many different forms of fromage throughout time, just so the French, you know, understand. You know, sometimes it's like a Gruyere, and sometimes it's just some American cheese, you know, but there's so many different kinds of cheese. But apparently to some people, all cheese is the same. It's just a one kind of cheese. But I'm sophisticated, so I can actually tell the difference between, you know, Roquefort and Gruyere, for example. But I love
both those cheeses, by the way.
Yeah, they're
some great cheeses.
So when we talk about what an actual lane swap is, guys, is that so the purpose of lane swapping back in the day, when God created all turrets equal, and they were all the same level of resistances, was what you wanted to do was you wanted to be able to either swap away from an unfavorable 2v2. You know, generally that was the reason, and it also kind of shifted the meta where sometimes if they picked a top laner that wasn't going to be good in a lane swap, you could get advantages that way, because the primary purpose of a lane swap is to dodge bad lane matchups and outsmart your opponent in terms of the macro so that their top laner gets no levels. And that just warps games, like, hugely. And there were a million iterations of this. The short version is Europe actually came up with the best iteration of this. So there were kind of regional metas that were forming about different ways people did lane swaps. When we finally got to international competition, the European lane swap kind of took over and became the de facto one. It eventually kind of turned into like a 3-0 or 4-0 push as people learned how to turret dive better. You know, this is not the time and place for like the history of the lane swap, which would be pretty boring to people who aren't me, probably. But what's the point is that we actually did settle on kind of a default method of lane swapping, of which neither NIP in their lane swap attempt, nor G2 in their several lane swap attempts actually ended up really doing. And also, I think what I love, and by the way, I love the fact that this is coming back, obviously, because I find it super interesting. But there's also a lot of changes that could shift up lane swaps in this particular meta. Now, the reason why they're coming back is because in the case of the FPX NIP game is because NIP, who had players like Rookie on it, who are very, you know, who know about things like lane swaps, you know, and if you especially have time to practice it, you're going to be able to kind of put a younger team who probably hasn't been through these lane swaps, especially a player like Milky Way or Care, right? Into a very uncomfortable situation. And G2 straight up said that they saw this, you know, the NIP versus FPX game and realized that they could, like, you know, tilt the zoomers, as it were, because at least many players on G2 have had some kind of lane swap experience, even if it was an amateur level. Because, you know, for example, Hansama was playing in Tier 2 in Europe. He wasn't actually old enough to play in LEC when lane swaps were happening. I know because he was on my team, Renegades, that eventually got promoted into what was then EU LCS. His first season of eligibility was on Misfits. But, you know, a lot of these players would have been exposed to this on G2, not Yike, but the rest of them probably to a certain degree at some point, maybe not Broken Blade either, but the rest of them would have been to a certain point in time. Plus they have Dylan Falco, who knows this very well, and the rest of the coaching staff like Duffman on G2, and they would have been able to practice it. So this is all to say that a lot of the claims that were being made about why BDS would have known about lane swaps are just like false on their face, because again, the Scion cheese, and we'll get into how that happens, is not a lane swap. And nobody engaged with my actual point, debatable. Which is that debatable.
Yes.
Only in America is it debatable, apparently.
Yep. I'll debate it.
And then when we get into, you know, what I found suspicious was basically that there was kind of an all-in five stack with very low information on their own red buff, on BDS's own red buff, which could have completely fucked the game, but ended up in their favor. And we can argue whether they knew something about that. And I also just have to talk about scrim leaks too for a second, because scrim leaks are very common. And I wouldn't say that they're always, you know, they're not like teams sharing film of the game with each other. A lot of times it's just one pro player mentioning something about, oh, this player was playing this champion, yeah, or like this thing,
or like
happened.
Dignitas potentially wants to, I was gonna mention, play it with like a Taric Shyvana roaming around the map at Worlds versus CLG, like just stuff like that. And like ruining, right,
Dom,
like,
I was gonna mention, Dom, that you were actually in one of the most significant and egregious, you know, scrim leak incidents, an earliest scrim leak incidents. Yep. Well, at least most publicly well-known one.
Yeah.
But, you know, players are always talking to each other, and they're messaging each other. And, you know, as I've said many times over the years, I strongly suspect that there is a huge amount of shared information between Korean and Chinese teams at the World Championship, especially when they're on opposite sides of the bracket and are scrimming like, you know, another Korean team's Chinese opponent. And I'm pretty sure that there's a lot of information that gets shared, you know, to help the other Korean/Chinese teams in those scrims. And so this could have been something as innocuous as, you know, a Labrov who made the call, you know, just hearing something like somebody mentioning, oh yeah, G2's been, you know, lane swapping recently.
Yeah.
And, you know, there have been people like Shakarez over at LEC who said, you know, on Twitter that he didn't hear anything that would indicate that in the comms, which is fair enough. But obviously they're not going to be like, hey guys, it's what we heard in the leaks. They know they're getting recorded. And also all you have to say is like, oh, I think they're lane swapping, which is definitely a possibility with the weird ass draft that they had, blinding Scion and taking fucking Jinx Lulu into Hail of Blades Varus Ash, right? It was kind of weird. And I agree that most teams would do that. What I think was unusual was the reaction that they had in that scenario, which, especially because I would be less surprised if we were still on pre-recorded draft and we had like the 20-minute break. But it does, in my mind, on balance, and I do admit that I was too aggressive in my tweet about this, I suspect more probably than not that there was probably a certain level of information that BDS had in advance in order to create this strategy. Or they just like to flip the game in outrageous gambling ways at level one. Maybe that's it too. Maybe that's,
yeah,
it.
I mean,
but
I
that could have turned out terribly for them.
Yeah, I think my take on the situation is I think that because it had just happened in LPL, and it was such like a, it was an LPL match that everyone was going to watch, because in the West, everyone was talking about like Milky Way, like he's like the GOAT. And for, you know, most Western pros, the part where they really start watching LPL and LCK, like they watch most of the matches, is when it gets to playoffs. I think because it happened in such a high profile match, it was already freshly in their mind. This is like what I think happened. And then I think that also by stacking level one, I don't think that it's necessarily like game losing. I think if they stack level one and the lane swap doesn't happen and you go late to lanes, I think you, your lanes are so positive for you that you, you can like still win from that position. And I think that that is honestly what they should be doing. Like, so when I look at lane swaps, the way that you force matched lanes, which we haven't seen a team do yet, is if you're stronger level one, which generally you are if you are the team with the stronger laners, so you invade and you drop three wards, you drop one in lane.
I will show. All right, let me just show this, Dom, because we actually have a map here, because it's going to be impossible to do without visual aids. So why don't you just log on here? I can drop the wards too. I can show where they are.
Sure, I mean, I can just drop the wards. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, please, because I forgot how this works. I used to remember how this works and the procedural, like, okay, then you take towers, here, you help here, with camps. Here. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, you could also drop one here. It doesn't matter. I mean, pretty much the way that it works is this. Is this being shown right now to the viewers?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So pretty much the way it works is there are three ways that you can get to top lane, or you can get to like bot lane, for example. You can go either through lane, you can go through here, or you can go through this path. So there's one path here, two paths, three paths. Yes, perfect. Exactly. So there's three ways that you can actually get to top lane. So you just ward them all. You send your duo lane mid, and then you check to see like, right, okay, you get to see when the wave is walking. If they're not,
and then you
walking,
go this way or this way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You send your lane mid, and then you just go to the lane where, yeah, it'd be on the other side, but yeah, yeah, you just go to the lane where the people aren't, right? So that is the whole idea of matching a lane. And the fact that they weren't able to do this in any of the games made me feel like they weren't actually prepared. Like, maybe they just called the first like game pretty well when it came to like, oh, like let's stack, maybe they're invading or something. Maybe they had the right read there, but I feel like if they actually knew it was coming guaranteed, they would actually have just been able to figure out this warding strategy, because this is very old. Like, it took us a long time. Yes, no, trust me, back in the
OG,
day, this took us
fucking years to develop. Strategy,
yeah, we couldn't we just thought lane swapping was impossible to counter for like years. But once the strategy is developed, it's really easy to just like have somebody recall it and then practice like, okay, we walk in, we put our wards, send our duo mid, and then we just go to the side where the enemy bot lane is.
So let's talk about what actually happened. We can just kind of break this down visually for people, because we're doing this because it's just impossible to follow if we describe what happened. So this is the formation that we saw at the start. Blue is G2, red side is BDS. So at the start of the game, you know, you have a typical spread. Support and bot are a little bit further back. So we're talking about a Lulu as support, a Jinx as the bot lane. What happens is they five stack and invade, which is not surprising because they had a Hail of Blades Azir as well, right? Ashe is in front. Ashe is going to Oracle's lens and try and clear out this bush. They see Lulu. Lulu runs away, right? Jinx doesn't get seen, runs away. There are two wards that are placed. They are not good wards, to be fair, right here and right here, by BDS, and then they retreat. Now, the first problem that I have, Dom, that I find suspicious about this, is that at this point in time, a very common level one strategy, he's hanging out in mid lane, Aurelion Sol, the entire time. So as these guys are all leaving the jungle, what can often happen is we would get these two players in this jungle deep warding, right? Which could have made the red camp just completely superfluous and like very obvious, but they didn't move. So that was, in my opinion, kind of a mistake by G2. Now, obviously, these two wards down here are not actually going to stop, the Jinx from potentially moving into lane. So they're going to come back here. Basically, everybody comes back here. They have a party in the jungle. We end up with Shayo in this bush, even though he doesn't know that there's a Lulu in here and the Jinx is up in the top side. And then effectively they kind of just collapse and get into a major fight here that then spills back over all the way into their jungle. And it's a 4-for-1 trade in favor of BDS. It's weird that they put Shayo here, number one, because like they don't see this. They don't see these players in the banana brush. And they can't see Shayo entering the brush via this angle either. But if there were wards up here, there would not, there, you know, they would have seen this play. And they wouldn't have invaded. So it seems very weird to me and suspicious to blind stack on the red, especially because let's talk about ways that the game has actually changed, because we have to theory craft too about how this would work, because there's different changes that have been made. The meta is different than it was 10 years ago, and the architecture of the map changed this year. So for example, another thing that could have occurred, right, when we had, them falling back from this bot side on this invade that gave them vision and knowledge of where Lulu is that one common thing that happens in bully matchups these days is that you can see a 4-stack potentially or a 5-stack actually sweeping through bot lane vision to get control of these brushes, so the Hail of Blades lanes isn't going to be attacking them early. So there, I'm going to bring back OG lane swapping terms. There was what was called strong side and what was called weak side. Strong side was where your two player lane was, and weak side was where your kind of, it eventually ended up being zero player lane was. And there were different ways that you could actually start your lane swaps, in terms of jungling. And sometimes you would do a strong side invade, for example, where the way that this worked was, sorry, let me get the mid laner here. You have your top laner and jungler. Here's your strong side, for example. This is not what happened. This is just a sample lane swap where they do three camps together very quickly. And then we start to build up a huge wave, which we then try and bounce off the turret, right? To deny farm, right? You try and bounce this turret while killing the turret. It was actually like an art to kill that entire wave on the turret. And have it bounce back so your top laner could potentially freeze it here when you swap back into the other lane. Or, potentially if there was somebody here, you just 4-man dive them, but it became kind of like a 4-0 side push is what we used to call it. And so the other thing is, if you clear out these wards, so back to the hypothetical, because they're with the wards that they had placed here and here, it was possible for 4 players to come into this bot side of the lane. We could have simply seen a strong side push. And here's the debate you'll make, Dom, potentially, which is that they're all up here. And so by the time they see the bot lane here, you still think that this bot lane is going to walk down there and win, even if there is potentially a top jungle invade into the strong side. Because that's where I think it's.
I think they would have to walk.
I'm suspicious. Yeah, sure. I think they would have to walk
like safe. But I mean, it is. So what was the combo? So it's Sion. I mean, they could potentially.
Yeah,
like,
it's Sion,
I
mean, Sion Rell.
Yeah, it's Sion Rell. I mean, I think there's ways where you just like walk straight to the bot lane. Like you walk around to bot lane. And then because you're so much stronger at level one, like you're able to soft an eye. And then what you have your jungler do is 2 camps and move over, contest third camp, or just like run across the map. I think that's a possibility. You can also like try to hard push top and then TP. I mean, it really just depends. I think that if they full commit on bot side like this, if G2 full commits on bot side, I think it's really risky, because also like G2 has no information. So I feel like if G2 like sees like that they were invaded bot side and then they still decide to make this play, it's like well played to them, I guess. You know, like they're doing something extremely risky, considering that normal lanes is just straight up losing. They can never really crash the wave 2v2 in normal lanes, and they were invaded on this side of the map.
So, I mean, I think one potentially another argument, it does weaken with the kind of the Aurelion soul in the mid lane. But if you clear out these wards and you actually get your jungler and top laner into this lane, because the architecture of the map is, this is just me theory crafting, because obviously we haven't seen it with this architecture. Even if the wave, for example, starts to push back, right, and we have the Ash Varus kind of shoving right here. If there is a threat that this top and jungle are going to be coming through what is now this new, because red side bot side is more susceptible to ganks via this path, because, you know, obviously this is harder to gank from, as we've seen. Maybe there's a way that even the push out could be punished here. So like, I'm just theory crafting based off of what changes to the map have already occurred. But by not having any wards through walking through lane, and it would be in this meta pretty common to clear out, to lens these wards and clear out vision with multiple players, right at level one to prevent kind of abuse by the Hail of Bladeslayne. You know, I just wonder about that. Like that, there are a lot of. I just have questions about whether that would occur. There's also the possibility, by the way, that we could have seen, you know, a strong side start on this side, but in their own jungle, right? Without any kind of invade whatsoever, in which case, yes, they do kind of get the lane swap that they want. But Adam is probably still going to be super far behind in this situation because he's not going to make it down here. And we're going to end up with a pretty, I think, powerful top lane advantage in this case because G2's already more or less set up for it. So for me, like stacking five here, this to me is very suspicious that they didn't, that they had some info about an invade and a lane swap. Like that to me is weird, right? And that's, in my eyes, that seems more probable than not that they had some level of insight outside of the game. You guys can make your own decisions about this if you understand lane swaps. I know Dom disagrees with me, but they're, and I'm happy to talk about this. Like, I think it's super fun to discuss. But there's a lot of nuance to this, guys. And, you know, obviously after this too, it was kind of an uphill battle for G2 to get back into this game, even though they eventually won. They did play out the rest of the swap better, but it's hard to come back from that early deficit.
Wonder actually had a really good point. I was like talking about it in detail, and Wonder's point was this. He was like, who the fuck would rather help BDS than help G2? Like, who would leak to BDS players because they're so unlikable? Like, that's what Wonder said in my chat, and I was like, all right, pretty good point.
They're so unlikable. Yeah. That's funny. But, you know, I think you guys like can understand that if nobody in, why I'm suspicious is that if nobody, you know, this is the formation that occurred. If these three do not walk in here and just get gangbanged, BDS is probably just super behind.
Yeah.
And there are many ways in which they could be really behind in this scenario, including just like a normal top jungle follow, because even if we get, for example, the aggressive lane up here in the top side, these guys are going to three camp. And I actually went back and watched some old VODs. And if you guys watch the duo jungle top clears, it's possible to do second wave crash dives at like 220. Like that's a thing. And because they would be so much faster with a coordinated, so the top laner is still level one, but the jungler's level three, like you could punish like a third wave crash pretty easily if they're playing aggressively in the top side.
I wholly believe that, you know, that there is a world where they kind of remember or were vaguely familiar with lane swaps, but to know all the permutations that could come from it, and the, as Monty was just calling out, a 220, 230 lane crash for wave two, the timings of all of it, there's,
yeah,
it just feels like there's no
timings through all of this. And you know, and I will take this opportunity while we've got this tool here just to describe what exactly, because we were talking kind of vaguely about what BDS did last year. So I will show you. BDS was also red side last year about this Sion. And the way in which it was similar was this. They did a jungle top follow with the Sion in the 2v2. Right. So basically they do an invade, they three camp it. I mean, I would encourage you to watch this Heretics game. It was Team Heretics versus BDS from last year, or you can just watch my video because I show it. It is actually hilarious because they fuck it up. Sion's level one, they're trying to dive here and they get a very fast, you know, push in, right? Because if you get a lane advantage and you crash second wave, they can be ready for the 220 dive. Mm-hmm. But what happens is that they actually bait enemy top laners. So enemy top laners pushing up here. I was like, where's the top laner? It's Sion cheese. And so they're kind of like making two different decisions at this point in time, which is like, if this top laner covers the dive, then Adam goes top, TP's top, and then catches this wave, right? And they just wasted TP's now across the map. Like, okay, so they get some advantage. If they don't TP, well, then you just execute the dive and the Sion is, even a level one Sion is a fucking menace when it comes to turret diving, right? So can tank the tower and then get incredible damage and value as his passive pops and everybody's just corralled into melee range against him. What ends up happening, though, is that we see the Gragas TP into this lane, and then the jungler pieces out, and then Adam's standing here, and this support is a Thresh, Mercer is a Thresh, and he just walks up and hooks the brush while Adam's trying to TP.
Yeah, and then he dies in the worst way possible. He dies with a splash up to the Scion passive. He literally gets 100-0 auto to death by a Scion passive.
Yes.
In like the worst way possible.
But that is what Double Lift thinks a lane swap is, guys. And there are elements. So what we would say about this is this has elements of an old strong side invade top jungle lane swap, but it's in a 2v2. So it is different. And obviously the goal is also different and there is no lane swapping involved. So that is an example. If you guys want to see the actual game where this takes place, I'll be releasing a video soon about this where I go over why I am suspicious about all of this, which is, you know, similar to this, but with actual gameplay. So anyway, my point is like, if people want to engage me on my actual point, is that it's just the 5 stack up here with no vision, because literally the only information BDS has is seeing Lulu at 49 seconds and the shenanigans take place close to a minute and a half. And they're just stacked there. And if you know lane swaps, you know, if there's anything else that could have been done, this could have been really, really bad for BDS. But you guys decide if you think there was leak. I think more likely than not, there was one. Can I prove it? Absolutely not. It's just my intuition from observing teams from a long time and thinking that 5 stacking with no info on red and like flipping your entire game over it is extremely suspicious.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for those that play Valorant, same thing. If you know, like on route, if you knew the other team every time on round 3 on their buy round goes B site and you just stack 5 B and all of a sudden boom, they're all there, that would be sus. That would be very, very, very suspicious that you knew that straight off the bat, and if they never showed it before.
Yeah. So, I just want people to actually engage with my analytical points about this, because I was around for the lane swaps and I know them very well, and I'm intrigued about how they are operating in the new meta, because there are, you know, in the FPX case too, in the NIP case, it was to deny FPX these bully lanes, especially the rumble support that they have been going after. And you know what's funny, guys, is I think this might be used against T1 and some of their Hail of Blade lanes this weekend. Because maybe we're going to see this evolve, you know, throughout LCK and LPL playoffs and even show up at MSI. So it's important to have these conversations because they educate viewers about what pro teams are thinking about here. And I admit that my tweet was worded in a way that was not going to generate the biggest analytical debate.
True.
That was
there it is, haters. That is the closest you'll get to Monty ever admitting that he did something wrong.
But my point remains, and I would love to know the explanation as to the mysterious minute and a half red buff 5 stack. That's the question I have.
Someone in the chat, I think, had phrased it great. Dubrenz, there's your shout out, homie. He said, you can flip your entire game by invading the enemy jungle at 130. But staying all in at the red buff at 130,
your own red buff,
is very strange. In your own jungle at 130,
it's super strange.
It's very strange. It is very, 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 very strange. That's the best way to TLDR it. Thank you, Dubrenz, for that. Just watching you guys with the tool and then showing the it like lane swaps become step by step, as Monty showed you. You usually have the two together, the top and jungle together on the strong side. It's a 4-0 push. Both teams are doing it. Both teams understand the other team's doing it. And I remember NA would get to the point where it was like, oh, they're not going to dive us 4v2 under tower. And then they always did. And we always died and we sucked. And it was just like, guys, everyone else in the world understands this. But our bot lane is just too stubborn to let the wave go. They're doing the same thing on the opposite side.
it got really crazy too, because it would be like, did you fuck up your bouncing of the wave or like your TP timing so that your top laner's down two levels, and like there are a million different shenanigans that could happen here. And it did change the top lane meta as well, because you couldn't play certain champions that were just absolute ass in lane swaps. So champions that were good in lane swaps, like Gragas, Gnar, I'm trying to remember some of the other ones that were pop. You remember any of the ones that were very popular at the time that were good in the lane swaps?
I mean, I think it was just generally there was like, I think the champions that were hurt the most were champions that were unable to sit under the turret, because I mean, there was different iterations, but like in the iterations that I played a lot of in season 5, the most common way that it was played was it wasn't pure cross mapping. It wasn't pure like 4-0 cross mapping. It was 3-1 holding. So you'd have like your top lane, your AD carry would end up in like a 1v1 versus their top laner eventually. And it would start with your AD carry like laning by himself. And then you'd try to 3-man catch the wave under the 4-man dive. So, I mean, in those situations, we like to play champions with CC. Like Maokai was really good, because Maokai had the ability to CC you under the turret. Like if you started tanking, pretty much the tech was, whoever starts tanking, like they always have like a support or something start tanking on the outside, you just like flash on him and you try to force him to just die to the turret, and you try to play off turret ramping. So I remember Maokai was pretty good. It was pretty much like all the tanky champions were good ones, and then the champions that like weren't tanky were dog shit. There was some fringe cases, like Karthus was actually pretty good, because Karthus could contest the lane at like level 1. I mean, Cho'Gath was pretty good because you have AoE CC and like you're obviously a tank. Yeah, Gragas was good. It just depended on what the meta was. We played a lot of Ryze because he could also like snare you under the turret. But yeah, pretty much what I remember.
The old days. Well, this was just
also
now that you were
say,
explaining it.
Aatrox is fucking garbage at doing this. So the Aatrox pick was no good. No bueno. He sucks. He's easy to dive. Yeah. And he can't clear the wave. So
you explaining it step by step, and again talking about the specific timings of wave crashing, that was peak learning from Monty for me. I remember this vividly, just you being so great at normalizing what is supposed to happen. So thanks for that.
But apparently everybody just thinks I'm a fucking idiot now, because I said I suspect with my own analysis that BDS had some level of scrim leak in this game.
Yeah.
Even though I am significantly better at analyzing this than BDS is, as proven by multiple games of them playing it.
Well, now they can use this clippable 20 minutes to do that as well. They can scrim leak this one. This one we'll just give to them. All right. Thank you for that, both of you, on lane swaps and how it's going to be back in the meta. And we'll keep an eye out for it for the matches coming up this weekend. One of the matches that will be coming up this weekend, T1. But why are they playing first? According to Faker in his interview last week after their match, this is because they had zero practice because they're getting DDoSed and there's no way. And so we here on Last Free Nation like to rate things. So this week's high key, low key, no key will be how impactful the T1 DDoSes were to their performance in the playoffs. Let's get into it. All right. You heard Faker there. Since then, he has apologized for the way that he said, maybe the timing that he said it, in terms of how DDoSing was affecting their practice. Dom, you were pretty outspoken on the fact that it felt a little, what is it called? Something lemons, like sour lemons. I forgot what it is. But just kind of not, I think you used the word not great sportsmanship, that he went to the press conference afterwards and saying that was the excuse. You got flamed for it. But the question is, how impactful were the DDoSes to their practice? High key, low key, or no key? So, Dom, let's start with you on this one.
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I would go low key. And when you look at what actually ended up happening, the reason why I had a problem with Faker saying this immediately after, even though he was asked immediately after the series, is I thought it undermined the success of Hanwha Life. I think that was like the best Hanwha Life series I think I've ever seen them play since Viper's been on this roster. They just looked really good overall. And by saying it at that time, it doesn't matter if it's like not an excuse. Like he didn't say like, oh, credit to Hanwha Life, or there was, it was just like, it comes off as like, oh, we lost because of the DDoS, which he ended up agreeing with in some capacity. And that's why he apologized. And he said, yeah, it's like important that I say things, like it's important how I say certain things. And yeah, he said he was frustrated from losing 3-0, which is something that's completely understandable. I mean, he's a competitor, right? He's like the best competitor in the history of our esports. So it makes a lot of sense that he would be frustrated after a loss, especially such like a brutal loss. Yeah, I mean, the thing that I thought people just glossed over and they completely missed is they were just talking about like whether or not it's an excuse or not. But so many people were telling me that the reason why Faker said this was to get LCK and Riot to do something about the fact that they were getting DDoSed. But in his apology, or in his like series of statements later on to the media, what he ended up saying was that they had been able to scrim and play solo queue on the super accounts for the last 2 weeks without DDoS. Like, people have completely missed this point for some reason. They haven't been DDoSed for the last 2 weeks. So also, it's like, when you hear that, it's kind of weird to make that comment when the solution had already been found to the problem. But also, the excuse that people were making, people were trying to say that they hadn't scrimmed in 2 weeks. Like, they're like, didn't you hear Faker? They're trying to stretch his words and make it, T1 hasn't scrimmed in 2 weeks. Like, how could they have not scrimmed in 2 weeks? You think they couldn't get new Tournament Realm accounts from Riot and scrim from a different location? They didn't scrim for 2 weeks. It's such like a mind-blowingly stupid take to have.
I don't even think that the DDoSer can get their IPs from their Tournament Realm accounts, because they probably don't have a Tournament Realm account themselves. Right, yeah. They don't have access to that server. So, like you say, Dom, they wouldn't even have to change their Tournament Realm accounts. They would literally just have to change their IP address. And by the way, guys, if there is one team that can probably change their IP address quickly, it's probably the team that is owned by not one, but two major telecom companies, SK Telecom, which provides internet service in Korea, and fucking Comcast in America, guys. You think that they couldn't call up some network engineers and fix this thing mad pronto? Like, get over it. So I agree. I think that their scrims were likely unaffected. But also, I would like to just direct some rage at Riot Games, where somehow, if you play on a public server in Korea, it is possible by knowing your ID for your IP to be leaked and for you to be DDoS. What the fuck is that? Guys, it's 2024. We had this problem with Skype in 2014. Like, what the fuck, Riot? And I know they're not fixing this problem because allegedly it's, you know, the anti-cheat that is in the Korean and Japanese clients that doesn't exist in other clients in the world. They're going to replace it with Vanguard soon anyway. So what the fuck do they care about it? But that is outrageous. That is just, frankly, just fucking outrageous that that's even possible.
Yeah, it's such a stretch. I mean, people just saw they hadn't played on their main solo queue accounts in 2 weeks, and they're like, they haven't touched the game for 2 weeks. It's such a ridiculous stretch.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think what this situation showed me is that there's literally nothing that could be done to get T1 fans to be reasonable and to like agree with any of my takes on anything, because I literally ended up in a situation where by some crazy way in the universe, I ended up with the same exact take as Faker while criticizing Faker. I ended up with the same exact take, and still people said that they're like, this is okay. So people were saying,
I've never seen Dom and Faker in the same room. I'm just gonna say it.
Yeah. Okay. So what I end up saying,
what the fuck, in my Monty? Videos.
No, I'm saying that are they the same person? They have the same take. I've never seen them in the same room.
True. I mean, what I ended up saying in one of my videos is like, people were comparing this to when Korean idols like apologize for having boyfriends. And what I ended up saying is, I've never heard Faker apologize for having a boyfriend, so I don't even know like how that applies here. And then like the other thing is, when most people were on his side, do you really think that he felt some need to apologize? Like, this wasn't something where people were massively against him on any of the forums that I saw. Like, it didn't seem like T1 is the most popular team. It was not something that I think was like super like where there was a bunch of negativity around it. I think he just is a mature individual, and he's like, hey, I probably shouldn't have said that. And it's just literally that simple. So, I mean, to answer your question, Digon, it's like a low key. I think it low key impacted them. I don't think that it like ruined their practice where they couldn't scrim at all. I think that they are like struggling with things in terms of just how they played the game right now. And they have been a pretty meta dependent team. When you look at T1 since they've been like this lineup, since they've been good, they've been a meta dependent team. And I think right now it's just pretty hard for them to play in the current meta.
I look forward to the incoming lane swaps against them when they, you know, Hanwha lets them have, or Genji lets them have the Ash Varus lane and then just lane swaps away from it. Because outside of Faker, they're all Zoomers too. Who knows if Zayas knows how to play into that? He's probably learning now, I would guess. You know, I would imagine this is going to be pretty rampant in scrims in China and Korea at this point in time. But it will. I think we'll probably see a little bit of lane swapping, and T1 is ripe for this for sure. But I agree with Dom. I think this is low key. Like clearly, I also sympathize with Faker in the same way that he's coming off an emotional loss like Inspired was, and like. It is unacceptable for you know him to be 10 years into his career and DDoSing still be a fucking problem that is harming him in the playoffs. Like that's bullshit. Like Inspired, could he have said it differently or better? Probably, but I do understand why he would need to vent in that moment. But I don't think that more practice was going to not get them clapped by Hanwha Life. Like if anything, I mean, I predicted Hanwha to win that series. Many other people did as well. If anything, T1 was the underdog going into that series. They had literally lost to Hanwha Life in their last matchup and weren't looking particularly strong at the end of the regular season. So are we that surprised by this result? It's not a crazy result.
So give me a rating. High key, low key, no key.
Low key.
Okay. I guess then. All right. So I'm going to have to preface this again as a former cybersecurity professional. The shit's high key difficult. It's not just for T1 since the hacks were all attacking all of LCK. Remember, it stunted the live shows of everything.
The Gen G as well.
The audience, right? It stunted everyone. So I think how much it affected T1's practice is still tied to how much it affected the LCK in total, especially because it's different than, oh, you have my IP as a individual, I can talk to the cable company, I can talk to whatever the internet provider to either send me a different one, we can get a different piece of hardware in there. When it's at an enterprise level, which was the LCK in general, and then they were able to get more information to start sending it towards T1, that is very, very, very difficult to trace. In cybersecurity, it is way more about prevention than it is from detection afterwards. It's like a lot of like, think of like detective work or sleuth work afterwards. It's like CSI. It's like you're doing cyber forensics. That's what most of it is because of the prevalence of VPNs and ways to hide where the signal is coming from. And generally, DDoS attacks are like a bunch of different signals all hitting at once that makes nothing be able to go in or out. And that is so, so hard to try and track down in the moment, especially given the fact that now it's at an enterprise level. So for me, when we talk about lane swaps, when we talk about the new permeations of the game that are coming out, I don't know, I've used this word three times now, variables coming out from the game now that require team effort, not just, hey, I'm playing solo queue. You can't practice lane swaps in solo queues. And the...
Sure.
precision that's necessary. As much as Koma and Faker are going to be able to teach the Zoomers exactly the precision there, this is something way different. And we've seen what it's like when this team doesn't have the full coordination there of Faker last year with Poby, and now even with Faker of this new changing meta, what could happen. I do think it's a real threat. I do think it's a real threat to T1. So I just wanted to throw that one out there from the DDoSing perspective. It is very, very, very difficult to prevent it from happening after it's already happened at that level.
You know, I would also to add on to your point, I do not think that this is a normal, like when you talk about like enterprise level DDoSing, because almost certainly nobody is going to be risking serious jail time for DDoSing unless this is connected to something like, you know, betting, like trying to gimp teams to affect betting lines. And in general, if you were going to affect one team to make the most money off of betting in LCK, you would do it to T1 because the odds are often very, very skewed and you can get very good underdog odds on them because so many people bet on T1 to win, whether they're good or not. Like, it is a very common tactic that people in esports betting will talk about, which is like, bet against T1. And if you have a way, because here's the other thing, Deegan, you also know that T1 and Riot are not going to want to acknowledge publicly that this has happened. So therefore, it's not going to affect the line. So obviously we can't know if it was betting, but it would not surprise me if this was some sort of betting related issue.
Yeah. So I hope we, you know, can crack down on it as much as we can, but it is just going to be a lot of work moving forward.
Yeah. And if it is a betting issue, then like it's going to be huge in scope probably, and a lot of money, you know, behind it, and therefore most likely very difficult to stop.
All right. That's a lot of the drama. We did some drama. We did some educating on lane swaps. Now it's time for the picks. This week's Galaxy Brain Club discussion. It's playoffs over in the Eastern world. LCK, LPL, three teams each left. Who's going to win and how are they going to do it? Let's discuss. All right. We were in the LCK. Let's stay in the LCK. T1 versus Hanwha Life, waiting for the big boss in Gen G. Will it be fourth T1 versus Gen G match in a row? How many are they on in a row? Or will it be something different with Zekka figuring out, hey, my Corki's not too bad and my Akali's pretty good as well? What do you think here, Dom?
Wait, say it again. Sorry, I heard something.
What do you think the LCK playoffs are going to be?
What do I think the results are going to be? I think it's probably just going to be Hanwha Life beating T1 into Gen G beating Hanwha Life again.
Yep.
That's what I think.
I did really enjoy the Gen G Hanwha Life series, though, so I would not say no to round two of that. I think it's going to end in a pretty satisfying manner. I'm very curious as to whether teams are going to try lane swapping against T1, because I think both Gen G and Hanwha Life have players from that era, and especially Hanwha Life, with Peanut like being the shot caller and knowing very well about these lane swaps. It could be really interesting to see his kind of command over these situations. And I think it could be definitely a super effective strategy against T1. T1, for those of you fans who watched them bounce back against D+, I was a little concerned that D+ was giving them Orianna and Ashe, which were just banned, of course, by Hanwha in all the games that they played against T1. These are just picks you just don't give to T1 at the current point in time because they're too annoying with them. And I also think that T1 did not play particularly well in that D+ series in spite of winning 3-0. What did you think of that series, Dom?
Yeah, I didn't think it was anything special. I mean, it felt like Dom1 is just not their macro is just too bad to beat T1. That's just how it feels like. It feels that Dom1 is such a rough team to watch because I feel like they just do things for like no reason. They'll just walk to Baron and start hitting it for no reason. They'll show up to a team fight they should never win for no reason. They'll make plays happen with like any thought about how it affects the game. It just feels like they're all field players. Yeah, I feel kind of bad for Lucid because like when I watch Lucid play, I'm like, damn, this team looks like it would be really tough to play with. I mean, also Kellen is just not good. I think Kellen is just by far the weakest support left in playoffs. He's probably like, I mean, I guess he's probably the second weakest support overall in playoffs. But yeah, I'm just not a huge Kellen enjoyer. And I just feel like
nobody is, and nobody is, and nobody ever has been. If you told me there was a Kellen fan, I would be surprised. Is there one? Is there one?
I'll let you know.
Yeah, probably not. It feels like Showmaker. If you're a Kellen fan, 1v9 or lose. It's pretty much how it goes.
If you're a Kellen fan, make a comment and tell us why you're a Kellen fan, you fucking weirdo.
Yeah, raise your hand. Raise your hand in chat right now.
A non-Gym 2021 fan, maybe. Pretty much all you can be.
No World War T1 fine or what? What is? Give me a percentage on Hanwha Life against T1. Give me percentages here.
Say like 65-35 for Hanwha Life.
Yeah, T1 could obviously bounce back, and if they have a good series, here's a good angle for you T1 fans. Gen G showed a potential blueprint to beating Hanwha. There was insane focus on Viper in team fights in the Gen G Hanwha series. Really close attention paid to his summoner spells, and like all of the focus of the engage kind of went into the back line on Viper. I think that's one of the major reasons we saw Chovy playing Grasp Azir, which is not something, I mean, that was Showmaker's thing in the regular season. So this was rather new for Gen G. And so by showing these tactics, I think that, you know, Gen G really displayed what happens if you just like all in Viper every single fucking fight and just like, don't split push. Let's fight. Let's get his sums down. You know, we have a protocol. It's like if the Azir goes in and gets his sums down, then Canyon's Jax is going to go in and kill him or vice versa. And so if T1 can replicate that level of dedication to the death of Viper, then perhaps they can do something. Because I do think Gen G like had a very strong idea of how they wanted to play and then executed it super well. That's the Hopium angle, but I don't think it happens.
The Hopium angle is pretty brutal. It'll be the first time in 2 years that T1 will not be going to an event. This has been the T1 Gen G Classico for the last since 2022.
The last four finals have been Gen G T1. Although this roster is now majority not former Gen G members. Oh, I guess technically Lehens was there and then gone and then back again. So,
yeah.
But, you know, the majority of the roster changed from last year to this year. But I'm enjoying the Gen G orange versus Gen G gold memes. And I love that Gen G broke up and both teams now beat T1. That's I love the memes, man. This is great.
Wait, you actually are happy that T1's losing?
I mean, I would rather Scout be on Hanwha and them winning. But yeah, I mean, I don't really, T1 fans are annoying. It's not about the team, guys. It's about the fans. It's the fans who suck.
Yeah, it's not the players. It's you guys.
I achieve pleasure from watching the T1 fans send trucks. That's what gives me pleasure.
Yeah, you know
what, and what, like have emotional meltdowns. It's funny to me.
Yeah, it's funny to me too. I mean, one of the things is it's funny that the T1 fans don't even believe that the DDoS was the reason they lost, because if they did, they wouldn't send a truck saying that the coach needs to be fired. Right?
Well, the suspicion, Tom, is that those were actually Chinese fans because the Korean was a bit scuffed. But so maybe it's now just like it's a Chinese psyop where like hate trucks from China, or they are actually just trying to disrupt T1, because remember, T1 is the killer of all the LPL teams. So if they can actually tilt T1 via trucks or like affect their internal organization, that is the key to getting T1 out of international events. You like my conspiracy theory?
I do like it. For some reason, I thought you said you were going to say, and affect their internal organs, then that's the key.
if they can get Koma fired, the bane of China, then perhaps there will be a chance for the LPL team.
Genius.
All right, well, let's slide on over to those LPL playoffs. Three teams left after today's JDG victory over NIP. Sorry for spoilers if you haven't seen that yet. We still have the top side of the bracket, BLG versus Top Esports, to be played on out. Loser of that will play against JDG. Winner of that already in MSI and will sit in the finals. Let's defer to our expert. How do you feel about this one? That's you, Dom.
Yeah. When it comes to LPL playoffs, I think we did get the best three teams left in the tournament. I mean, this is what people were expecting. There was a big difference between the top three and fourth, who was FPX in regular season. Towards the end, NIP did make it close. Like, Talia had some heroics on Rookie had some heroics on Talia, but going into this, I mean, I think that you have BLG versus Top Esports. I think BLG is still by far the favorite. They seem like just the best team in China. It's so hard to play against them because like it doesn't even feel like they're playing to all their players' strengths or drafting to all their players' strengths. At the beginning, or like almost every single game in LPL. And now when you watch them play, it's like, man, like you always have to consider so many things. Like, it's like, how do we deal with the fact that they're the best team at doing like the Ashe Varus lane and like diving bot? They have one of the best Lucian Nami's. Elk is also one of the best Jinx players, so their bot lane is a huge issue. Feels like you never want to give them Kalista. You don't want to give them Lucian. You don't want to give them Varus. You have to pick your poison because they play all those lanes well. Then you have Jhun, who can play all the meta junglers. You have Knight, who's insane on Ahri, who's, you know, just like one of he's just the best mid laner in China. So there's so many things to deal with. And this is with like Bin being perma weak side.
Underperforming. And he's also been underperforming. Like, I mean, he hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been like international tier Bin, right?
Yeah.
And so what's scary about BLG is like the question remains, like, what happens if Bin comes online?
I mean, I think it's also just like Bin is not a player who is playing his best champions right now. Like, this is not a Bin meta. This meta right now is people are playing a ton of Aatrox, they're playing Rek'Sai top, they're playing Udyr, TF top. Like, this is not even close to Bin meta. Like, Bin meta is like Renekton, Jax, Camille. Like, if we end up in Renekton, Jax, Camille, Fiora, Gwen meta, then Bin is just like the best top laner in the world, or like second best top laner in the world pretty much all the time. So the matchup is like, it's so hard because I feel like unless 369 just starts turbo stomping top, I feel like it's very hard for top esports to actually be able to beat BLG. Even though top esports bot lane is good, like their bot lane is one of the best bot lanes, they might be the best bot lane, I feel like the way the BLG coordinates with their jungler is so much better. Like, there's so much more practice at how to make the lane unplayable for the enemy bot lane. So it's not just a 2v2 war, it's just like they have it down to science. It's we push, we crash this wave, our jungler comes, we force you off the turret, and there's really not much you can do.
And then Jhun takes over your jungle and starts harassing everybody. I mean, we saw this actually in the first meeting of these two teams, even though it was the first week of the LPL, so let's not draw too many conclusions from it. But, like, extremely dominant wins through bot lane between top and BLG. So, I agree. I think it'd be surprising to see BLG not take the trophy.
That's the same scary team, I guess an evolved version of this scary team that has been going back to back to back to back. And now, again, with the addition of Knight, with the fact that it has been down to a science and Jhun is playing that well, very scary. Who's joining him? Who is the team that's joining him? So let's say BLG take the win, top then drops down, JDG there. Is it top JDG?
We already saw a top JDG. So I think it's probably top BLG again. Yeah, JDG has been good, but I think there still is a tier differential between them and top esports. You know, they've chosen to run intriguingly with Flandre, just perhaps because he's just the veteran and maybe Sheer has some nerves, but I'm surprised they've run so heavily with Flandre into these playoffs. Did that surprise you, Dom?
I think it did at first, but then when you think about like the champions that are being played right now, like the best champion that Sheer was playing was Kassante. Right now it's a lot of Rek'Sai, which I mean, it seems like Flandre is good at, and TF. And TF was one of the picks that Flandre was playing a lot before he ended up being benched for Sheer. So I think that because of the meta, it makes more sense to play Flandre. I mean, also this guy is like a mega veteran, you know, world champion, yeah. LPL champion, stuff like that. And I think that they do value that as a team. I think that the main thing that it's going to come down to is like drafts for JDG. I feel like last series they actually had decent drafts, but they were just playing poorly on the day. But I think that there are ways you can just disrupt draft. Like maybe they just get rid of like the Varus, because they were playing Zarya into Varus every single game, and Jackie Loves Varus just looked really fucking good. I mean, he just looked pretty much unbeatable on that champion. Varus is permabanned from a lot of like the really good AD carries. I know it's permabanned versus Guma essentially. Like no one gives that guy the champion. So I want to see JDG throw some different looks at top esports. Like maybe you go for something more like the Zaya Rakan. I mean, Rakan will probably be permabanned in the series, but you get the point. Maybe you go like a Nautilus game instead of just perma playing Rell. I think the reason why the games looked so similar is because the drafts are so similar when top esports played JDG. So I don't necessarily think that that means that JDG could never beat top esports. I just think that they need to have a different approach into the series. They probably just need more agency on players like missing. Like I don't want to see his Rell anymore. I think his Nautilus is really good. Should perma play it? If you know they leave up Rakan for any reason, go for that. I thought the Ash was pretty good for missing today, so maybe they can go like Ash Kalista like they did today, or maybe they pick Varus themselves early. It ends up being an Ash Varus angle. I just want to see some more iterations of bot lanes because I think it will change the way the series goes. I wouldn't be surprised if JDG plays top if JDG ended up winning the series. I don't think that it's like impossible for them to win, even though they got 3-0'd.
That's what I was hoping you to follow up on and clarify, because I know at the end of your stream there, Dom, that's what you said, and I was like, 3-0 was 3-0. But I guess what? Do you give JDG the same better chances against top? Do you than T1 versus Hanwha Life? Those are both 3-0s.
Yeah, I do. Because I think that like, when you went into the Hanwha Life series, most analysts were predicting Hanwha Life to beat T1 because Hanwha Life feels like they do a lot of things in the game better than T1. They have like a lot of better.
Their team fighting also has been really good recently.
What'd you say?
Their team fighting has been very, very good recently as well. They really stepped it up in that regard.
Yeah, their team fighting is good recently. Then there's also like meta questions with T1. It's, you know, Zarya is one of the best champions of the game right now for AD carry. It's one of Viper's really good champions. It's Guma's worst champion of all time. You know, there's a bunch of like aspects as to why you would think that Hanwha Life would be better. And when you saw like the Hanwha Life series, it felt like Hanwha Life just played the way they played and like how they'd always play, and T1 just lost them straight up. Whereas like, I think the JDG versus Top Esports series was more interesting because JDG was a team that was much better at team fighting and like dragon setups and understanding like how to play the map post 20 minutes than Top Esports. And then Top Esports actually in the series ended up outplaying JDG at these aspects of the game. So going into the next series, I want to see, like, assuming that Top Esports actually does lose to BLG, was this a fluke, or are they actually just a better macro team than JDG now? If they are just better at playing setup, macro, vision, this type of stuff than JDG, yeah, then they're better for sure because they're just better individual players. So I want to see them be able to continue that. So also, there's always the Tien factor. If Tien's in the game, you never know what he's going to do. Tien is kind of like Peanut. Tien and Peanut are just like, it's like LPL and LC. It's LPL, Peanut, and LCK Tien. Like, they're really good at like the same types of things, and they're super smart players.
Until
but sometimes
they make one
just
terrible
run
decision.
Yeah, sometimes they just run it the fuck down. So that's always an angle.
I love how you have to still consider that though with Tien.
Yeah, absolutely.
And with Peanut, I mean, look at some of his international performances, right? Like, he will just inexplicably do like a one-man invade and commit suicide and then lose Baron. That's who Peanut is, man. I have accepted in my love of Peanut that's who he is, and I trade it for brilliant pathing a lot of the rest of the time and really, you know, fun tower dives.
Do we have the Krang photo? Is the Krang photo on hand? It's probably not. That was one of my favorite ones. It was, what was it? Peanut controlling Chovy.
Yeah, but there's Peanut controlling Chovy, but there's no Chovy to control anymore. And I'm not sure he needs to control Viper. So I think that's actually one of the problems with Hanwha, is that there is no ultra powerful mid lane android to control for him anymore.
That's it. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, those are our picks here for LCK and LPL as we're closing out the season for both these teams. Next time we have an episode, we'll have our attendees to MSI across the board there. So, yeah.
Well, not LPLs yet, to be fair.
We'll have both of them.
Oh, that's true. That's true. We will have the attendees, but the finals will not have happened. And by the way, guys, if you're wondering why we're not talking about LEC, because spoiler, G2 wins. And that's all we need to say about it. Until somebody fucking does something in that region. You know, that's it.
G2 winning feels like Cloud9 making it to international. That's what it feels like to me. It was like, okay, we give Cloud9 this pass.
This time, though.
Exactly. That's what's exciting about it for me in the LCS moving next split. It's like, we give them the pass until it doesn't happen. Yeah, regular season. Yeah. And now it's like, oh shit.
Who's gonna beat them? This Fnatic lineup that is playing like 300 kill games in 4 games against Vitality. Like, that team is, I'm supposed to believe that team's gonna beat G2. There's no one that looks close to G2. It looked like G2 played bad against BDS and still beat them pretty easily. That's it.
Yeah. Not a lot of great answers yet until the answer's proven to us. We'll find out here in a couple of weeks whether there is a solution to the G2 problem in Europe. All right, y'all. That was a hell of an episode. Thank you, everyone, for sticking with us through it. Dom, how's your wailing neighbor going?
Oh, he's still belting nonstop. He just screams all day.
Is it? Okay, as a former opera singer, I had to practice. Is he practicing singing, or is he just actually just
no, trolling? he's like severely autistic, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Monty, what do you have for this week?
Fortunately, not that. I think I'm going to actually attend the LCK finals in person.
Whoa!
The first League of Legends event I have been at in many years. So
that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back. It'll be a lot of fun to see. I'm sure the cameras will spot you and do the zoom in.
I'm sure they won't, because they definitely do not want me on camera, but there you go.
Well, okay.
I'm just saying, here's my threat to you, Riot Games. If you put the camera on me, you're responsible for whatever sign I happen to be holding that you do not see when the camera starts on me.
You're going to do the debate.
will it say $100 million to women? I don't know. We'll find out.
Jesus.
I was a trip. You're just gonna pull out the double fingers, you know, the bird.
Dom, lighter schedule for you this week?
Yep. LPL, nice. LCK. Well, I mean, I guess Saturday, Sunday is still LCK, LEC, LPL, LCK, LEC one of the days. So still a pretty long day, but yeah.
How long are you there for?
I leave next Tuesday.
Okay. Well, then we won't do the show on Tuesday. I guess we don't do the show on Tuesdays. We do it on Wednesdays here in the West Coast. So, all right, man. Well, enjoy your last week there in Europe. I will, what am I doing this week? No LCS interviews. Maybe I'll stick my head in an LEC and do an interview. I don't know. I have interviews with Po Belter and Aframu coming out this week. Less spicy, but very much for the old guard that love it. Catching up with them was super fun. It was very, very, very fun. And they have some insightful things that they shared. It was really cool to go down memory lane with both of them, and they were great interviews. So enjoy that. Otherwise, thank you, everyone, for watching. Please like and subscribe here on Last Free Nation. If you like the content that we're pushing out and the voice that we are giving that other people are just too afraid to do. And we'll see you guys next week for more Power Spike.